The following is a presentation of Open for Business, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship's conference for business students and business professionals at the Urbana 06 Missions Convention, held in St. Louis, December 2006. For more information, please visit ofb.intervarsity.org.
Our speaker this evening is Sam Lam. Sam is president of a Singapore-based Linkage Asia and one of the leading practitioners in the field of leadership development and human resources consulting. He serves as an executive coach and an advisor to a number of notable CEOs and senior government officials in Asia, with expertise in leadership development, executive assessment and coaching, performance and the improvement of top teams, and talent management. He was formerly country head of Towers Perrin and director of the Hay Group in Singapore. He worships at Bethesda Church in Singapore with his wife Shirley and his two daughters, Joanna and Susanna. And the thing, if you want to know a little bit about Sam, Sam's a guy who loves his work. He loves coming in on Monday. Sam's going to be speaking on human resources, business as mission. Sam, we're looking forward to what you're going to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. When John Terrell first approached me on discussing this subject on business as mission in the field of human resources, I was wondering if we're going to have an audience. There are more interesting things to talk about. But he described that there are enough of our graduate students, recent graduates, and individuals in the undergraduate that are looking into this as a profession and would like me to share a little bit of this perspective. Just as the discussion went on this morning in all the studies that particularly last night's message, I did not get into this profession being an undergraduate like Amy sitting there thinking I want to major in human resources. I did my undergraduate work at SC, at University of Southern California. Had no idea I was going into this. My first degree was in biology. My second degree was in history. My master's degree was in Southeast Asia affairs. I wanted to be a Renaissance man, and I found out my father wasn't rich enough, and I had to get a real job. In my first career, I started off in sales and marketing, spent 6 years with American Hospital Supply, which finally became McKesson and Baxter. Some of you are familiar with that company. After that, I spent 6 years in 8 years in executive search. That was where I began my interest in looking at the people issues and in human resources. Talk about calling, never knew my calling. Was seeking always, grew up as a Christian, raised in a Christian family. I am a product of Western missionaries. Having gone to China several generations ago, my great-grandfather received the Lord in a small little village outside of Xiamen, a city in the coast of China. So my daughters, Joanna and Susanna, are fifth generation Christians, so we're still seeking. A lot of searching, looking at how the Lord has led me in my field, in the field of human resources, and have been a practitioner for the last couple of years in the three of the largest firms in this field. So hopefully we'll be able to share some ideas, some thoughts, be able to energize some of you to want to choose to go into this profession and look at it as a way to be able to serve the Lord and to and if this could be your calling in life. Let's start off with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time together. We pray for your leading, your guidance, your speaking this evening. As we consider your call, we pray that you lead each one of us. Lead us to know what you want us to do with our lives. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Human resources is one of those wonderful fields. It has one of the biggest multiplier effects I recently was in a conversation with a director of human resources in a large Asian multinational. He was sharing with me, this guy's a non-Christian, he was sharing with me how he owed his job in a certain sacredness. And the reason why he holds his job that way is because he said that every morning as he goes into his office from his parking lot, he thinks about the 22,000 people of whom he can make their lives very, very happy or make their lives very, very miserable. And he said, it's with that kind of thought that I go into this profession. And if you think about it, that's what a lot of senior people, leaders, human resources leaders have to face with every day. This is a very good field to get into. Take a look at this quote. The 4,000 guys surveyed on this, senior people in corporations in the United States, 62% are worried about a company-wide talent shortages. The way they go about recruiting, the quality of candidates they're seeing have gone down, and companies are struggling with that. They've also found that 1 in 3 of the employees have recently been approached by another firm to lure them away. So issues regarding talent, issues regarding retention, issues regarding recruitment are all issues that corporations are thinking about. What I'm going to do tonight is spend the 45 minutes or so together that we can go through the content, and then what we'll do is we'll leave about half an hour for some discussions if you choose to do so. We'll deal with four concepts really quickly. These are four basic concepts of human resources and four specific applications. That should be quite easy. Then what we'll do is we'll cover a certain perspective, four perspectives that will give you my point of view. I should qualify it as a Christian's point of view, which is my own point of view, in terms of issues around pay, around benefits, around learning and development, and around work environment. And last but not least, a couple of takeaways in terms of missions. First, there's a big misnomer called human resources. Corporations always assume that human resources is a resource that belongs to whom? The companies. You're my resource. So if you come in the morning, you are a certain unit of production. If you leave that evening, you're not that unit of production. This is one of the biggest misunderstandings of human resources. Tom Davenport, in his book Human Capital, describes that the human resource is a resource that does not belong to the corporation. It actually belongs to an individual. If you think about it, you are choose, especially this generation, you can choose who you work for. Nobody ever needs to work for a jerk. You know, there are lots of opportunities. There are a lot of good jobs out there. You know, there are people will walk out of situations. And we all know. Some of us have done that before. So the whole issue is the resource does not really belong to the company. It actually belongs to the individual. Now, this concept of human resources and more sophisticated corporations are beginning to look at the resource not necessarily belonging to them, but belonging to that individual, which is actually quite a Christian perspective to it. At the end of the day, you own your talent, your skills, your gifts, your competencies. You're going to move to whoever would be able to maximize that resource the best way. So the more enlightened human resources managers, leaders, consultants are looking at that resource and saying that this individual here is highly talented, And the best way I can manage his resources, I become a banker to him, an investment banker to him. I can tell you that if you join me for a certain period of time, your value is going to go up. If you work with me for a certain period of time, you're going to learn a few things. If you work with me, Kerry, for a few more years, you're going to be so highly valuable that there are a lot of people out there who want you. So I can make your value go up, and the capital actually is yours, not mine. So companies that are more progressive are thinking about it in terms of human capital and not necessarily in terms of human resources. Look at this quote. Baruch Lev at New York University, who is an accounting professor that has done a lot of work in terms of accounting for human capital and human capital value, talks about his research that intangible assets, which is primarily human capital in organizations over this period was from 1980, which is 20 some years, has basically grown from 20% of the value of companies to about 70% of value of companies. So like this afternoon, both the speakers talk about that these are the kind of intangible assets that we're talking about. Application. It's an old one we all heard of. It's people. It's not programs. It's the individuals, not the processes that we got. The idea is not new. However, the application is very complex. In other words, the idea that it's people, not programs, we hear this in church all the time. All the church growth people are talking about that. Rick Warren talks about that. You know, Rebecca Pippin talks about that. It's all real. It's people, not programs. And this is what corporations are realizing. As Christians, there is definitely a place for us to play a role. It's pretty obvious. I don't need to spend a lot of time on that. The whole issue of how to deal with the people aspects of things. Some of the best stories in this field, if you look at some of the Howard Schultz stories in terms of Starbucks, those of you who have not read it should read it. It's a really wonderful set of stories on how he makes, you know, such systems work with people. There are very, very good stories in terms of learning how organizations are paying attention to people very, very differently so that they would be able to get a much more engaged workforce. But for us as Christians, we know people is the most important thing. It's the connect between God and the rest of creation. You know, it's paying attention to every individual and making every individual matter. Concept number two. Excuse me, I'll take my jacket off. Concept number two is a concept of total rewards. Most of us think about rewards in human resource systems as pay and benefits. When we talk about pay issues, we're talking about things like base pay, variable pay, recognition, stock, all that kind of stuff. I'm quite sure some of you in here have taken your human resources classes, understand different aspects of talking about pay. One of the things that is very interesting in terms of looking at rewards is that base pay and benefits are pretty much the kind of things that organizations are beginning to think as need-to-play factors. I mean, that's what you need to be able to have to come into work. The need to win factors are things like learning and development and work environment. This is one of the Talisperian approaches to it, which is really quite good if you think about it. It's a holistic way of thinking about how we go about energizing individuals to come to work and what do you do at work. If you think about it, pay and benefits bring me to the door every day. I need a job and I need a paycheck. But it's the kind of work environment that we're in and the kind of learning and development that we've got that makes me energized, enthusiastic after I enter the door. Human resources practitioners got to be able to start thinking about these four areas. How to deal with pay, how to deal with benefits, how to deal with learning and development, and how to deal with the work environment. Now, let's talk about the applications a little bit later. Think about this. They did a piece of research on the five top reasons why employees join companies. And they differentiated this based on a study that looked at total shareholder return of what we call high-performing companies and other companies. High-performing companies, people join them because of challenging work, promotion opportunities, base pay, work climate, and quality of top leadership. Other companies, base pay, challenging work, promotion opportunities, work climate, and health benefits. Did you notice something here? Number five is the same. I was missing over there, yeah? So, for top performing companies, quality of leadership is important. What other thing you notice on these stars? Most of them are where? On the lower quadrants, yeah? On the lower boxes. So companies that pay attention to this usually got more mileage. Same thing for five reasons why people stay. They stay in companies. Again, what we call the bottom quadrants are way higher. In other words, the need to play factors are given in terms of pay and benefits. It's a given. And when you talk to younger people about benefits, it's meaningless. I mean, anybody below 30 has no organs. You know, I mean, they know that there is a heart, there is a stomach, it's all theoretical. You know, once you pass 40, you suddenly realize there are organs in the body. You know, I mean, you got to work on them. So talking to young people about benefits is a waste of time. You know, what you need to do is start talking to them about learning opportunities, the kind of work environment, and that's where you get your mileage. Sophisticated HR practitioners know how to play with that. Now, application. One of the applications we've found in all the years that we've done this type of work is that in the old days, like I mentioned, in the early career, you really don't care much about pay. I mean, it's important, but you want to be able to learn. And you want to be able to grow, to have a good resume, and move on. As you get into your mid-career, families come, responsibilities come, obligations come, suddenly pay gets even more and more important. As you move into later part of your career where organs become more clear, you say, hey, you know, I need some benefits, all right? Now, but what has happened in the recent years is a lot of that becomes cramped. In other words, people are moving through these cycles way faster than before. In the old days, that was the typical model. Now, it's all cramped and squished that people go through those cycles, or demographic groups go through that cycle way faster. They demand for more way faster than in the past. So because of that, we really got to know our people. And a lot of work that we're beginning to do, both with global multinationals and with Asian firms, is that we've found that the struggle, whether it is in Boston, where we're headquartered, or whether it is in Bombay, it doesn't change that much. The issues are the same. The crunch becomes way higher in terms of moving people through the different part of cycles. One of the biggest applications on this is that we need to really know our people, know the demographic group, know what is intriguing the individuals, pay attention to different subgroups within our organizations to become way better. One morning, as I was walking into a client on this, the Chinese Christians have a tradition. For those of you who don't know this, it's quite interesting. Among the Chinese devotions, you know, in the old days, there are a lot of Bibles that they are printed in English in the New Testament is always included with the Psalms. The Chinese have always included New Testament with Proverbs. And one of the things is that they always encourage this old Chinese devotional tradition is that we encourage people to read a chapter of Proverbs every day. And it's 31 chapters. So it's good for any month of the year. So it's a good tradition. One morning as I was thinking about these issues with a specific client that was really belligerent about his demographic groups and not being very considerate, a verse actually came to mind that in my readings that was quite interesting. Let me just read it to you. Thought it would be quite relevant. Proverbs 27 talks about, let me just read it. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. When the hay is removed and the tender grass shows itself, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in, the lambs will provide the clothing and the goats for the price of the field. You shall have enough goats, milk for food of your household, and the nourishment of your maidservants. This guy was a Christian, but he was looking at these issues totally from a very pragmatic way. And he said, no, we don't worry about this group, we don't worry about that group. He was just being very argumentative about stuff. So that morning when I read these verses, it really sort of like connected us together. That you need to know the state of your flock. In other words, what's really happening to your people? Because you know one of the things about these intangible assets? They've got feet. Alright, this is the most remarkable intangible assets. They come with feet. And if they're not happy, they'll walk. You know, and you're going to lose them. And if 70%, as Baruch describes, of your assets have feet, 70% of your assets can walk out of there. So it's one of the very important things for us, you know, and for us Christians is really interesting because we're dealing with people, you know, and our calling is with people. And to be able to connect and understand the issues about people and human motivation is one of the most fascinating things. I'm going to skip this quote. Sorry. Where is my application? Oh, the application is know your people. Sorry. The third concept has to do with employee engagement. I love this restaurant. Thank God it's Friday. You know, it just describes how lousy a lot of people think work is. But you know, one of the things as Jim was describing me, I really love Mondays. I mean, I love Sundays too, if the sermon is good. But you know, generally, I love Mondays. I wake up in the morning, I love my job, I go to work, and it's a fantastic way to work. And one of the things that people confuse engagement with commitment. You see, engagement has to do with how excited you are at work, how keen you are to get in there and do the job. Now, you know, most work is pretty boring. One of the reasons why I generally do not recruit fresh graduates these days is I rather have them go down the road and have somebody else disappoint them. Right? And then about 3 years later, I pick them up and, you know, they think how wonderful a boss I am. You know, and that's pretty bad, but, you know, that's been a pattern for the last couple of years. But one of the things is, but there may be, if you guys are interested in an internship in our specialty area, let me know too. But the whole issue is, it's very, very difficult to have a lot of people enthusiastic over a bulk of work that is pretty routine. I mean, a lot of real work is quite routine. So, in order to be able to get them interested in work, there must be a way to connect them, as two of our speakers talk about it this afternoon, with a bigger cause, with something that is meaningful to them. In HR practice, it's very easy to do, because we actually make lives of people quite different. When we talk about engagement and commitment, think about it in two ways. There are people who are not really committed to the firm, and they're also not very engaged in their work. And these people generally, if I decide to be unkind and unchristian in those days, I generally like to put their names on the database of headhunters so that my competitors recruit them. These are, people who are generally not enthusiastic. Now, there are those who are highly, highly committed. They are loyal. They love the company. They love, the organization. But they're not really engaged in the work. They have high propensity to stay. They hope their children will work for their firm. But, they're really not very enthusiastic. Sometimes they may be loyal for the wrong reason. My friends work here. My husband works upstairs. It's just a real great place. We've got great people here. It's kind of nice. Yeah? But in terms of the engagement with that work, it's almost minimal. Then there are those who are highly engaged in their work. The professions are mostly that way. Whether you are an HR consultant or HR professional, a lawyer, an accountant. I work in a big building in the middle of the city that has a number of law firms. And what happened is that in the evening when you go back late, there are tons of people that are still in the offices. Now, they're highly engaged in their work, but it's very different, very little difference between working for one law firm and another law firm. Yeah? They're just as engaged in law firm A, they're just as engaged in law firm B, they're just as engaged in law firm C. They just love the work, not the firm. Accountants are that way, doctors are that way. Working at hospital A, hospital B, not much difference. I'm just extremely engaged in my work rather than the firm. Now, what we want to do is we want to move people to be a highly engaged and highly committed. That's the tough part. Now, if you think about the kind of work that we do in terms of creating that kind of environment, let's skip these slides. The quotes, you can get them on the website when I send them out. Think about the application. Leadership is central. In order to make people highly engaged and highly committed, we need to be able to help people become better leaders in organizations. There are plenty of good leadership material out there. Whether you do a situational leadership by Blanchard, or you do a John Maxwell stuff, or you do a Stephen Covey stuff, there are plenty of good stuff. Use them all. Alright? I mean, there's no harm in learning more about it. How to motivate people, how to get people intrigued. You can do Idiot's Guide for all I care. That's pretty good, actually. No harm using them. Learn as much diverse models as possible in terms of understanding people. We can sit down and have a long debate regarding one tool better than the other, one approach better than the other. No harm. Just do something. One of the important things about leadership development and making organizations to get people highly engaged is don't look for only best practices. There are a lot of stuff out there on best practices. Look for best fit. Because one of the biggest problems in working in global situations, and some of you are interested in working in global multinationals, crossing borders, doing all kinds of interesting stuff in missions, one of the biggest mistakes is always look at what is best practice. Because if you think about best practices, it could be best practice in that situation, but not necessarily best practice in this situation. Look for what is best fit. Because once you start thinking about best fit, we'll be looking at a context and say, what are we actually in? I love the Abana skits that are coming out. You know, I mean, just look at all the cross-cultural situations that is presented. It's an issue not what is best. I mean, learning languages is good. Going out on short-term missions are good. All that stuff is good. But is there the right fit in the right situation that we're in? The whole issue with great HR practitioners is always looking for best fit. One of the things that we learn quite a bit, I mean, in my own devotions, particularly being an HR practitioner and, working with organizations, is always looking at the wonderful example of our Lord Jesus. He really is looking for best fit all the time. In all the messages that he gives, whether it is to a blind man, whether it is to a woman with the issue of blood, or whether it is with the woman at the well, whether it is with educated or the uneducated, whether it is to the high or to the low, he's always looking for best fit. Good HR practitioners know how to take something that is of a very, very high standard, but be able to look at it to make it fit in the situation. So if you look at good HR practitioners, particularly in global multinational firms, when they go to places ranging from Saudi Arabia to Thailand to China, they look at good high global standards and then finding a way to fit it in that situation that they're in. So looking for best fit is actually quite spiritual. If you think about it, what we need to do as practitioners is to think about those opportunities to make things fit. The other application that we see quite a bit in terms of getting highly engaged workforce is to be able to have a high degree of self-management, managing self, influencing people, and leading organizations. You know, one of the biggest difficulties with HR practitioners is that most of them most leaders think this way. You will be motivated the way I am motivated. You think about how we go about giving a message, getting a point across. You know, I know some of you don't like 4 points and 4 applications. You prefer a story. All right? Now, sorry, I prefer 4 points, 4 applications. So, what do? I create a message around 4 points and 4 applications. Now, does it work for you? No. Too bad, you know? And so that's how we communicate our messages. Are we the most effective now? I've only got 45 minutes. Now, if I got a longer period of time, then what I would do is I would experiment with different things. I'll play around with a couple of scenarios, I'll tell a couple of stories, do a couple of exercises. You know, every one of us get intrigued by things very, very differently. And one of the most important things is we need to learn how to manage ourselves so we don't get carried away with our own message. You know, find a way to go about influencing and connecting with the different individuals and be able to lead organizations. Great HR practitioners don't talk about themselves. In other words, great leaders, the focus is not you, but them. That's why I hate these introductions, because what's important is not me. What's important is you. You see, in order to be able to get that message across, is one of the most critical things for leaders to be able to understand their constituents and be able to work with them in that way. Delivering performance is one of the big things about organizations. I really love those two messages this afternoon, except I do have a small issue and I'd rather not critique it too bad, otherwise I wouldn't be invited back to Abana again. But one of the things it has to do with delivering of performance, one of the big parts is money. Human resource managers generally are not very good with linking back to the business agenda in organizations. Because part of the faithful agenda that is needed for businesses is the delivery of performance and the delivery of numbers. One of the reasons why human resources are seldom invited to the board and invited to the table is because they do not know how to link those dots appropriately. And more and more we're beginning to see the great HR practitioners as differentiated by the very average HR practitioners out there is mainly because they understand how to connect this all with performance and basically how organizations are delivering on the bottom line. My only issue with this is that I really believe delivering of very, very high profits sometimes is an end goal. Because faithfulness to the stakeholders' requirements is part of the mandate for our responsibility. Because at the end of the day, and you know, we can debate about these issues a little bit later, because one of the agenda is faithfulness to the stakeholders' issue. And the shareholders' issue is maximizing profit. And if we have to do that as part of the agenda, I think it's part of the deliveries we need to have at the table. Last but not least, in terms of getting employee engagement, has to do with doing something better than nothing. So that's why Idiot's Guide will work. I'm dead serious about it. It's better to know something than knowing nothing. So as HR practitioners, understanding human dynamics, understanding the issues around how you know leaders think, how people think, how teams work, all these things need to be at the table in terms of applications. Skipping these two. Last item on there is globalization. It's a complex subject. When we HR practitioners deal with issues of globalization, there are big issues around pay and benefits in the US, around the world, expatriation issues, corporate social responsibility, issues about going into places with religion, law, and culture that are very, very different, cost containment, technology transfers. These are all very large subjects that need to be dealt with. Al Irishman, highly recommend that you go listen to his talk. A good friend of mine, particularly on this issue of ethics, of bribery, of what is right, what is wrong, what could be done, what could not be done, what's black, what's white, and what's gray in between. It's extremely complex. If you think that it can be easily treated, you haven't dealt with it. My father, did a lot of work in Indonesia over the years. Once I asked him as a young, you know, business person, I said, what's the difference, Dad, between, how do you go about in certain situations without paying a bribe? And what do you consider a bribe and what do you consider not a bribe? He gave me a very good definition. He said, if you pay to get favor, it's a bribe. If you pay when you're threatened, it's not. It's a ransom. And sometimes you are in a situation where you're in a ransom. Now that's his definition. Whether is it right or is it wrong, I think we need to learn how to explore it and understand it a little bit better. I worked with a very, very senior business leader who, when he was younger, actually did a lot of bad things in terms of being a policeman, did a lot of bribes. Now he is a big police general. You know, I mean, you want him to repent from all that, it's pretty difficult. But you know what? He's trying his very best now that he sits on some major boards. He's trying to make right. And I'm trying to figure out how I can help him. You know, I mean, I'm not going to haul him out. You know, I'm going to work with him to make it work for him. These are complex issues we need to deal with. And it will be harder and harder. What I would like you to think about is that the application, particularly on globalization, is not that simple. Look at it from multiple disciplines. look at it from multiple perspectives and look at it with multiple solutions. There are ethical considerations. There are sociological considerations. Let me give you a couple of tough ones. I'm quite sure you know you guys are good at grappling with that. Child labor. Good, bad, or no good? Good, bad, or ugly? Child labor. Ugly. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's very hard to say. I mean, having a child as a maid in the home, you know, to be able to help your children and one day be able to have sufficient money to send home, is it a good thing or a bad thing? I struggle with it because I see that situation in some of the countries we work in. It's better to have bread on the table for others, or should we make sure that all these multinationals are protested against and we hold banners in front of them and say, you know, don't buy certain brands because they use this child labor to produce that kind of shoes or that kind of jeans. I struggle with that. I don't agree with it. But yet, on the other hand, we need to work with those realities. It's highly complex. And I think as HR practitioners, as we move global, we need to start thinking about how to deal with it a step at a time. I had a wonderful opportunity of visiting with Gap recently. Gap is one of, I think, a very good firm trying to do something about corporate social responsibility globally. They're struggling with it. They've made some mistakes, and they're working on it. But the whole issue is coming out and say, we made some mistakes, we're working on it. And the whole issue is not to bury it, not to oversimplify, but as practitioners, looking at how to deal with it from multiple solutions, multiple perspectives, and multiple disciplines. It's a fun career. It's a great opportunity to be able to serve the Lord, to be able to talk about these issues, and to be able to find a way to be able to link up to a very, very complex world to make this world a better place. Now, let me check, let me do a time check, Jim. Eight 12? What's our time like?
We're 8:45.
All right, ends at 8:45. Good. It's 8:12. I've got four more slides. This is a good break point for questions and discussions. Or do you want me to go all the way to the end?
How much long is the end?
Four more slides.
Go.
Okay. Four applications in terms of, four different aspects of HR issues, the big pieces that I showed you in total rewards, pay and the way it works, benefits and the way it helps us, learning and development and the way it facilitates growth, and work environment, how it supports employee engagement, how to make people love Mondays. All HR practitioners deal with these four areas. First one is pay. Very basic, but extremely, extremely complex. It's just not a paycheck. We're talking about these days dealing with things from executive compensation. So I was with my last firm that I was with, Towers Perrin, is one of the leading human resources consulting firms, one of the biggest in terms of executive compensation. We designed some of the largest pay packages, shamefully, for some of the top executives around the world. We're talking about numbers like... yesterday's Wall Street Journal talks about things from $344 million packages. I mean, we're talking about one guy's pay, you know, things like that. I mean, some of that is outright shameful. Talk about minimum wage issues. What is right? What should executive compensation be a multiple of in terms of base pay? Global compensation. How do you deal with the same qualified individual landing in Shanghai? I have a wonderful case study on this I did for recently a Boston-based firm what we call the four men and a woman in Shanghai. It's really an interesting case study. We're talking about a Chinese American, a Singaporean working in Shanghai, a Chinese American working in Shanghai, a Singaporean Chinese working in Shanghai, a Shanghai local graduate from UCLA that is working there, all right, who was an international student and went back there to work. All right, we're talking about fourth person that was from Hong Kong working in Shanghai, and a fifth individual from Taiwan that is working in Shanghai. Now, if you know anything about Asian Chinese diaspora and demographics, these are five different nationalities with same skill level and five different compensation packages sitting in Shanghai. Alright? What do you do? They all will have different compensation packages. It's a nightmare, you know, and we've got to deal with that. Variable compensation, incentive design, job sizing, and the whole issue is we've got to deal with this every day. Question perspective on it. Pay, the first thing. Deal with a couple of issues around fairness, around greed, and around incentives. Who are the best qualified people to talk about this? It's really fun because we've got some parameters that we're better educated and better qualified to understand about them. Think about greed. It's a fun subject to talk about. We all got it. It's the 10th commandment. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's da-da-da-da-da. All the five guys there with that, four guys and that gal, are all coveting one another. Alright? And how do you deal with that? Fun stuff, huh? Fairness? They're all equally qualified, same job. Shouldn't they be paid the same? Life isn't that simple. These are issues we need. We have no time to deal with that, but we need to be able to see how we can be able to play a role with putting in a perspective. Benefits. Benefits is something that you guys are not interested in, or most of you are not interested in because you know why. But benefits has to do with demographics. Different groupings of people have different needs for benefits. That's why these days with cafeteria type benefits is getting quite popular here in the United States. The basics are really quite needed, whichever environment you work in. However, it links to the kind of values of the firm. In other words, we've got certain value set. That's why we believe that benefits is important. You will listen to Schultz talk about his story at Starbucks. I do not know if some of you have read this story. Schultz talk about the fact that he gives benefits even to medical benefits even to part-time people at Starbucks for a very, very simple reason. Because when he was young, he went home, you know, one day and saw his dad, you know, was he a truck driver or some type of lowly paid individual that was sick, you know, hurt himself and didn't have benefits. And to him, from then on, he said everybody is going to have medical benefits. Now, do you know they pay more for benefits at Starbucks than for coffee? All right. So it's a lot of money they put into benefits, but it represents the values of the firm. Right, wrong, good, bad, or ugly is another thing altogether. The whole issue is it represents a certain kind of values that you guys say we want to have within the firm. Who are better qualified to explain, to talk about values, to articulate values than we here in this room? Let's learn how to do that. So if we learn how to do that now, it's way better when we get into those situations where we have to think through to articulate values. Last but not least, benefits is one of those areas where it's most used, most abused. Because it is a lot of times taken for granted that if I don't use it, I lose it. You know, like sick days, you know, calling in sick. You know, there's a difference between really sick and calling in sick, and I'm entitled to so many days of sick, so I'm going to use it at a beta, you know, and all that kind of stuff, you know, that we shouldn't do. So those are the kind of areas that as Christians, I really think that we need to be able to play a role and to speak up appropriately in this area. Learning and development is an area that facilitates growth quite a bit. Couple of things that I really feel that it's important for us to think about in terms of learning and development, particularly as a Christian, has to do with the whole area of discipline and discipleship. Jim asked me a question before the session. Are you a disciplined person? The best way I can describe it is I'm working on it. It's like this, you know, my room gets very, very clean, and then it goes down, and I work on it very quickly again. It goes down rapidly, I work on it very quickly again. I'm quite sure it's most of your experience if I get to your dorm room to take a look. And we all struggle with it. But the whole issue is knowing certain areas that we are lack of discipline in and build the disciplines around that. Learning and development is a very interesting area in organizations. It has to do with how we can be able to grow the kind of disciplines that people can be able to learn. There are a lot of self-taught, self-learning type approaches now in organizations. There are a lot of disciplines around getting people into communities to be able to learn about certain subjects, to be able to develop in certain areas of expertise, hot groups, what they call certain groups, to be able to have some common interests like this to be able to learn from one another. So learning is an issue of discipline. And one of the things that I think as a Christian that is the easiest for me to teach and the easiest for me to learn is focusing on disciplines. If you think about it, as disciples, our job is to be a continuous learner. And the learnings that we have in discipleship is probably one of the best ways for us to articulate and describe learnings in organizations. One of the things that a lot of organizations have done is to take a lot of these principles and then have incorporated it into organizations. When the church, and as disciples of the Lord, I mean, what does disciples mean? A student, a learner, a follower of a certain craft, and a follower of a certain skill. It's one of the best platforms to be able to talk about learning and development in organizations. Last but not least, we begin with a calling. I'm going to close with a calling. One of the things about work environment, to be able to create a work environment as a great place to work, great companies to work for, has to do with creating the kind of environment where every individual has the opportunity to realize his calling. In other words, what God has meant me to do. You know, if every individual in the organization walks in, Christian or non-Christian, realizes that he has the opportunity to maximize his gift set, his talent, his capabilities, he or she will be highly engaged in the organization. If you think about a wonderful work environment and be able to be in a place where most of the people walk in and say, thank God, it's Monday. It's got to be a situation where most individuals get a sense of calling in their work. That this is something that I do best. A wonderful author, those of you, I don't know, some of you may have heard of this author at the Peter Drucker School called Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote a book called Flow, and he wrote two subsequent books called Good Work and Good Business. He describes highly engaged people. He studied a lot of students in a lot of professions, that highly engaged people lose all sense of time. When they do their work, they're so engaged
they experience something he describes psychologically as flow, where you are so into it that you lose all sense of time. And work in its best form, in a highly engaged form, is when we are able to create environments in such a way where people feel, wow, this is what I'm meant to do. Whether it is a meal task, and that's why Bill Pollard is such an admirable leader and service master, if you think about what they're able to do, it's really quite a menial type of work that organization does. It's cleaning up stuff. I mean, let's get real, you know. But they have been able to create a company where people take pride in what they do and really be able to glorify God in the process. So at the end of the day, it's a calling. I do not know if some of you, my prayer is some of you find this as a noble calling in this profession, if God calls you to do this. But at the end of the day, it's to create this type of calling for others too, you know, as you become successful practitioners. Thank you very much. God bless. Yeah, be happy to. Yes.
With everyone that you had worked under you, is there like a big difference between Christian and not Christian in the time, and what was it?
The question is, for people that work for me, do I find a big difference between a Christian and a non-Christian? Yeah, I think the difference is their faith and eternity. But in terms of work quality, I find as many highly enthusiastic Christians as highly enthusiastic non-Christians. I find as many competent Christians as many non-competent Christians. I find as many sloppy Christians as sloppy non-Christians. I think, work ethic to me, sadly speaking, I haven't observed that much difference. Yes.
Do you have any good tips or examples of ways to link performance with rewards?
How many ways are there? Any tips on linking performance with rewards?
Yeah.
I think there are two things. We sometimes we're a little bit shy on directly linking performance and rewards, mainly because of a much more drive for egalitarian approach to things. So when we're a little bit more prone philosophically to a much more egalitarian approach or fairness approach to things, we don't want to differentiate it that much. All the research has indicated that if we do that, if we don't differentiate, actually, the high performers get discouraged. The low performers are also equally discouraged. Because what has happened is this. If, Philip, you were a great performer, right? And I don't have your name. K. Let's say K is good, but so-so, all right? I came to K and I said, K, came to Philip and I said, Philip, you are really great. You know, you're really good. Alright? And I came to Carrie and said, Carrie, you're also good. Alright? Philip knows that he's so much better. What do you think Philip feels? Huh?
Devalued.
He feels that, hey, you know, you're not serious about what you're doing. You know, it's like, everything, sometimes in America, I get some really quite expressive friends, you know. Everything is swell, great, and wonderful, and highly exaggerated, you know. So I struggle with that all the time. And suddenly I say, hey, is he really that good? Am I really that good? So that's one of those biggest difficulties. So one of the biggest tips that we have, well, if you wanted a tip, is that you need to think through what's the philosophy of the firm. And then, if you're ready to differentiate, you need to be sufficiently bold. Differentiating it very little doesn't make that much difference. So some of the research have indicated that anything less than a 15% differential is not really a differential. So it's got to be significantly big enough to be able to notice the difference. Yes.
I'll follow up, and then we'll have questions, and people can come up here, and then we'll take a break.
Sure.
Well, I was going to say, isn't it just another form of that incentive recognition in and of itself, public, private, you know, in front of the corporate body versus the personal note? I mean, hasn't that been identified as a motivating factor, because then he feels highly valued and she feels highly valued as well, raising both of their levels of motivation?
You can try to do that. All right, and there is a public part and there's a private part, and I think both are necessary. But what happened is that when you deal with compensation, as it relates to that, there must be a sufficient, big enough differential.
If you're going to make compensation a part of that incentive.
Yes, exactly, right. Exactly. If you're going to make compensation a part of that,
right.
Yeah. And part of it is also working through it in terms of the philosophy and the value of the firm, and also the philosophy with regard to that job. Some jobs you require a lot of differentials. Some jobs require minimal differentials. The nature of the jobs need to be taken into consideration, because some jobs, I mean, obviously you guys didn't choose to consider going into HR field to make a lot of money. This is one field that doesn't make a lot of money. If you want, you should go down to sales, marketing, branding. The other talks are better, you know, finance, banking. There are better jobs to make a lot of money. But this is one of those jobs you can make a lot of difference. Shall we take a break now? And
this says we go to 8:45.
Yeah, it does.
And so if there are other questions, I think we should have more questions.
Okay, you want to? Okay. Yes, sir.
I'd like to have you expand a little more on your subgroups that you were talking about, because for my programmers, their reward is based on, you know, the recognition that you were talking about, not so much the compensation. They don't care that much about that. They care about being recognized, having their name attached to whatever they're doing. My accountants, they're looking for the money. My salespeople, they're looking for money. But if I set up a formalized program that's going to be in place that somebody can say, okay, well, see, if he gets recognized, he gets, you know, 15% of the income of this revenue stream. If this developer gets recognized, he just gets his name on the application, something not right there. To me, what you said was the subgroups need to be recognized differently, but doesn't that create a disparity that's going to cause conflict in my groups?
It will. It will. Because one of the things that you'll find is that when we start understanding the demographics, people are motivated very differently based on, number one, the subgroupings. They naturally gravitate towards that based on a certain subgrouping of choice in terms of profession. So, for example, people who go into accounting or people who go into human resources generally are not as financially driven as the guys who go into sales. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't go into sales because of my love for you, you know. I mean, you know, I go into sales because I go into sales, you know. I enjoy selling. I mean, I chose selling as my profession when I graduated from university. You know, my first job was a sales job. Loved it. I really loved it. But, you know, the incentives were good. So by profession, you differentiate. Now, you need to get one level, I think you need to get one level deeper and start looking at, are there any subgroups within that group? Yeah? Based on their needs and their orientation. So that's why, from the benefit standpoint, of course, you know, cafeteria stuff does work here in the United States quite well, because different people want different parts of, you know, that pie. Now, does it cause problems? Yes. But the thing is, it's okay if you know about it before you get in. All right? You remember the old story that Jesus did when he went to the marketplace and he recruited for the people to come to work for him? And he got some in the morning, all right? Got some at noon, and got some in the evening, and he paid them all the same, all right? Of course, they got mad, all right? Now, that's good lessons, because the thing is, if you got them to agree to that up front, all right, it's easier to deal with. That's what the Lord did with that. I mean, you guys agreed to that. You know, I'm not going to go into the theology of it, but the whole issue is, you agreed to the deal, you know? And
and you enter the profession based on open eyes, that you know you go into the deal, just like in this subject here with human resources. You know the deal, ain't like the deal down the road. You know, if you wanted that deal, you came to the wrong room. Yeah. Yes.
Can you tell like a story of one or two human resource positions that were guided by the Christian values, and you think that you could make decisions differently if you were not Christian?
Christian, a decision based on your Christian values.
No, guided.
Guided by my Christian values.
And you would make decisions differently if you were not Christian. Like,
I'll give you two business decisions more than so-called human resource decisions. Two of the biggest decisions that I made on that was when I was with, is this being taped?
Yeah.
Do you have any question and answers? So I won't get into the specific of that. I'll give you one that is a good one. There were two specific situations. One is we decided there's a very, very large consulting assignment for British American Tobacco. I was at that meeting with all the senior consultants, and I said, you guys can take it if you want. All right? I just don't do tobacco. I ain't showing up. Simple as that. Large client. Great client at the firm, but you know, I ain't showing up. You know, I just don't do tobacco. Very much guided by what I consider right. I mean, you may do it, that's fine, but I ain't going to show up. I mean, you know, I ain't going to show up for the discussion. If you guys are discussing the subject, this meeting, I'm out the door. You know, you guys can do whatever you want. So that's one. Second one recently has to do with an issue of Singapore trying to get involved with the gambling issue. Wanting to build casinos, you know, government opening up on casinos. We eliminated, six of the top firms listed on the exchange from our mailing list. I just decided, I said, you know, I don't want any work with them. You know? And the other certain point, it's wonderful to be able to make those decisions because I kind of feel good and I kind of like enjoy bashing them too. it's those decisions. I think, but they're more, I don't know if they're Christian values. It's more my value as the result of the Christian faith. The result is in that. Yes?
Prior to practitioning in HR, you have experience. The marketing and a non-HR major. What is your recommendation for people who want to get a seat in an HR profession but don't have an HR background or want to switch jobs?
Okay, my recommendation is that...
Can you repeat the question?
What's my recommendation for people who have not got an HR major and want to go into the HR profession? Two possible areas. One is, in America, there are some very, very good HR societies that have great training and great courses. If you want to go into the training area, ESTD, the SHRI is very, very good organizations to get involved in. Human resource organizations are very, very good. So get involved with that. Second thing is join a good firm. Look at the Fortune and Myatt Company series. We have a representative here from Healthy Companies. They have a wonderful list. Look at some of those top firms and join them in terms of your HR. Look for an HR job. The other one that's really good, and there are some really top HR consulting firms here in the United States where you can join at an entry level. Watson Wyatt, Hay, Towers Perrin. Towers Perrin, my last firm, is a wonderful firm. Watson Wyatt, Towers Perrin, the Hay Group, Mercer Consulting, they are really, really in a range of smaller firms, depending on the area of specialization. Try and join one of the big firms and learn something. I think that would be one of the best ways to do that. Yes?
You kind of mentioned before that your kind of strategy from as a management point of view is to try not to recruit graduates straight out of school. It's kind of wait 3 years.
That's a naughty comment.
But to that particular point, I mean, say that you are a manager or HR consultant, and you're managing a group of people where, to some extent, the job is by design and by necessity, routine.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not necessarily happy and you're trying to optimize it and make it as exciting as you can, but you've kind of reached that limit.
Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah.
That's why I think understanding calling is very important. You know, there's this old story. It's one of those chicken soup type stories that I thought was very good. I think many of you may have seen it before. You know the story about a guy building the wall? You guys heard about that story? There's this guy, you know, these bricklayers that are building the wall. And the first bricklayer, somebody asked him, he said, what are you doing? He says, you know, can't you see, idiot, I'm laying bricks, you know. Then he went out down the road, they asked the second guy, what are you doing, you know. He says, oh, I'm building a wall, look how nice the wall looks, you know, I'm in strict, you know. The third guy came along and says, hey, what are you doing? He says, oh, I'm building this wonderful building, you know. And the fourth guy said, what are you doing? The fourth guy said, you know, I'm actually building a place for people to come together to worship God. All right? So you think, there are four bricklayers, you know? I mean, they're all doing very, very boring, very, very routine, very, very mundane type work. They're laying bricks, all right? The first guy was cursing and saying, you know, you idiot, you know, don't you know I'm just laying bricks, you know? But the fourth guy has a view that he is building a church building. Now if you think about that, all mundane work, there's a lot of mundane work, is linking it to the greater view. What HR consultants have a word for it, they call it the line of sight. In other words, from what you're doing to the vision, there is a certain line of sight. So that way, these people become very enthused in what they're doing. If you look at lab scientists, it's really interesting, especially people who are doing medical research and biological research. The kind of repetitive stuff they do in the lab is extremely boring. My first job, I had to grow endothelial cells, you know, in this lab that these cells, for whatever reason, I have these terrible hands, my cells die all the time. You know, I've been talking about green hands, you know, I have these gray hands, you know, and things just die. And you know, I mean, it's a very, very boring work, but people who do that type of work, and the good ones, they have a view that they're going to do something that's going to make a significant difference. So they go through those repetitive acts all the time. And it's connecting that line of sight that is probably one of the most important things.
Would you say the principles you've given us tonight are primarily related to America, or would you say they're universal that can apply? If, so, for example, I'm an American and I'm trying to develop Africans. My whole value is not only Christian, but my whole base of sight is different than folks I live with. Not a judgmental, it's just an observational difference. I'm just curious, as I've listened to you speak this evening, I'm not sure I can answer the question.
I don't think I can either. Mainly because I think what I'm dealing with is not only America, but what I would consider more developed or developing countries, not necessarily extremely primitive situations. I don't think it applies to, you know, some of the more challenged areas in difficult countries. But I think it's quite applicable if we're talking about a bulk of Asian cities that we're working in. I don't think you can take this and go, you know, into a remote part of Indonesia to make it work. But certainly it will work in Jakarta. You know, so those are the kind of limits and caveats. One more? Yes.
Any views on principles about managing out the bottom 10% of your organization? For the
Jack?
Yeah.
I can't disagree with Jack Welch. But I think the whole issue of managing the bottom 10% out is really overrated. Mainly because, number one,
the question that I always have for that is, why are they there in the first place? You probably recruited them wrongly. To have to consistently manage 10% out, I think is bizarre. But there is one issue that I do want to confront about performance management and managing people out or firing people. We didn't get a chance to talk about that. Is that sometimes it is not unkind. Some people are better suited elsewhere. And I was partly kidding about my competitors recruiting some of those people. I mean, you know, some people are better suited elsewhere. I mean, I worked for two of the top HR consulting firms, the Hay Group and Towers Perrin. And both fabulous firms. Towers Perrin does about $1.5 billion of revenue every year. You know, it's a fabulous firm. But you know what? I've got people move on both sides, and they succeed in one and not the other. It has to do with culture. He's viewed as partner material in one and totally useless in the other. And the whole issue has nothing to do with that individual. It has to do with fit. You know, and so I really think that when we manage people out, part of the issue is not just like, you know, it's a tough thing to do. I have to just harden my heart to go get that person out. You know, I mean, life isn't that complicated. I mean, some people should belong down the road and not in our firm. Good. Thank you very much.